Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is The Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Megan Danick to discuss some more Frasier. This week, we are discussing the final six episodes of Season 2. After the terrifying lows of our last batch, we are both pleased to have a good six to round out the second season. We talk about Roz becoming a full-on member of the core cast, how much cartoonishness we can accept in Frasier, and full-on farcical sword fights. It was a fun time. On to the discussion. Hello, everyone. I'm here once again with Megan Danick to talk about Frasier.
The Frasier.
Frasier. Megan, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm great, because it wasn't bad Frasier.
Yes, it was good Frasier. Finish out the season with some good Frasier.
It wasn't. I don't know if I could have taken another run like the last one. It was no monkey murders in this one.
No monkey murders. Some wonderful slapstick episodes.
A lot of farce.
Yes. Good times.
Good farce. We're talking about the last six episodes of Frasier from season two. Wrapping up season two. Beginning with Someone to Watch Over Me.
Back at the Seabees.
Seabees, the second Seabees episode. Are we getting one of these every season?
I feel like there's more. I don't remember if it's every season, but I think that there's more of them.
But this one is about a stalker.
Dun dun dun.
And Frasier is worried that his number one fan, Carrie, is coming to get him, so he hires a bodyguard for the Seabees.
That's right.
And the stalker is just a middle-aged lady who's sad.
Yeah. And once again, an overblown reaction to something.
He does judo that one lady, though, which is pretty...
which is really hilarious. I mean, I get it, you know? Like, I get the trepidation. I get the... It is kind of creepy if someone, you know, knows what you had for breakfast and you weren't broadcasting that. There is no Instagram at this point in time, so, you know, it's a little creepy.
Yeah, I think this is my least favorite of this batch. It's bad, but I do think it's a little
much,
a little strange. It's a little strange because they don't have to do anything, but they make Carrie just a sad middle-aged lady who has lost her husband and is just like lonely. I'm like, well, that's fair because it's a sitcom and I guess you don't want to make things too heavy, but
it's sad.
It's kind of like, but and also it kind of distracts from, it's kind of making light of a situation that many people have, you know, you just said there's no Instagram. This is 1995. Yeah. Nowadays there are more niche celebrities than there ever have been.
If you like someone, you can kind of, you know, like from a distance creep on them.
Yes.
In a safe way, in a middle-aged, you know, old lady who lost her husband kind of way.
And on that same note, like there is, I think, more prevalence about creepy fans and how terrible they are. So it's harder.
I mean, it used to be a lot more work to be a creepy fan.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's somewhat easier to be a creepy fan. So it's 1995. It's different. Although I don't care how lonely this lady is. Sneaking things into people's briefcases when they ain't looking
is creepy.
That's creepy. I don't know. I don't really. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, it makes you wonder if she had like a comment section to work with, if she would have had to go that far. You know, like maybe she
was
if social media had existed, she could just like, you know, comment on his posts of his, you know, order at Cafe Nervosa and say, oh, that's good. Hope you have a good day. Here's, you know, a recipe for some something. I don't know. I feel like it was a well-meaning taken to the creep level.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that they thought much of this. I think they just went, oh, what's the plot? We have a number one fan, and he gets more and more obsessive, and then Frasier gets paranoid, and there's lots of women in red dresses.
Lots of women in red. That must have been the color of the season.
I mean, I think...
And then, I was just going to say some nice digs about the fact that his bodyguard is also a woman.
Mm-hmm.
His driver is also a woman.
Yeah, I think, obviously it's just a plot device because they want to make him paranoid. So they have to have every single person that's around him is a woman so that he is worried about it. And then they have Martin, of course. Well, is Candy busy or I forget what he says. Roz gets a pimple.
Yeah. Roz does indeed get a pimple.
Why no makeup?
Roz is like probably in her mid 30s, right? Isn't she? Like,
yeah, I think that's the,
I don't know.
I think they're all roughly the same late 30s to mid 40s ish age. All the manga people, except for Martin.
She should probably go to a dermatologist because you shouldn't be getting that kind of a thing. Well, I don't know.
What? You should call Roz.
Poor Roz.
Should call Roz in this episode and tell her to go to the doctor.
Yes.
3 hours before the CBs.
I'm glad that Roz gets a little bit more like meaty episodes following this one because
This one's a little bit light. It's pretty simple, and like it doesn't get to the levels of insanity that some of the later. Like, this is just kind of a wacky episode, but it also isn't, like, the craziest thing is Frasier judo throwing some lady who's a part of the CB group organization. I don't know. She ends up on the ground. They still win, though. They both him and Roz, after he gets mugged as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he mm-hmm. get, he gets Seattle... Is really a Seattle parking garage that dangerous?
I don't know. He did kind of come out swinging. I mean, I think he was, you know, a willing target at that point, screaming for a fight with what he thought was a, you know, woman in a red dress.
Yes.
But
it's fine, I think, at the end of the day. It's not terrible. It's just it's all right.
It's fine, but then it's followed by one that it's like, oh, yeah, it shows you kind of the, like, the spectrum of, you know,
a Frasier
episode goodness. Because then they go ice fishing.
Yeah, breaking the ice is the name of the episode where, yeah, the boys go ice fishing. They could have just called it that. That's literally the plot of the episode. It's just like Martin is going to go ice fishing. His buddy bails out on him, so Niles and Frasier go.
Yes, and it's funny because it's not going to be both of them at first, though. It's only going to be Niles.
That moment when Niles comes into the apartment wearing his getup.
Looking like Elmer Fudd.
Yes, a skinny Elmer Fudd. And he talks about his Timberlands on. I guess that's before they were fashionable. That was when they were just utilitarian boots and not fashion boots.
Very much enjoying the experience of preparing for the ice fishing trip more than the actual ice fishing trip.
It's fun. Like when I'm going on a camping, I'm going camping. Let's go gear up. What do we need? What do we need? Oh, we need this. We're going to have a fire. We need a big fork.
We need some hot buns.
Hey, man, That is, if I was out there on the ice, absolutely I need some hot buns.
Oh yeah.
I'm getting I'm getting from my feet, I'm getting from my hands, I'm getting from my butt. That's absolutely.
Yeah, I would have gotten, I probably would have stocked up on that, like more of them than he even bought. But especially when you see the cabin, I guess it's not a cabin, it's like the ice fishing hut shelter or something.
It's a cabin of sorts. It's a very small, yeah. You can call it a cabin. It's just, it is on the ice, literally. And it would not be warm. It would be cold. this episode's really about it, like, it's very simple. This episode's really, really simple at the end of the day, because it's literally just Frasier upset that his dad has never said I love you to him, or has done it very, very. Did they definitively say he's never said it?
I think he does. I think he mentions that he's never said it, and you know, it's something that he's his sole purpose for going, which it didn't seem like that was the case in the beginning. Like, to me, I thought it was more like a competitive with Niles kind of thing, like, mm-hmm. Oh, you're going on this with that. And he's like watching him prep and watching them get all excited. And then he kind of, you know, sort of passive aggressively gets them to say, do you want to come? And he's like, you're going to nag me about it. I guess I'll just, yeah, sure. And it's like, at first I thought it was because more of brotherly, you know, competition. But then Niles says that he never said that to him either.
Mm-hmm. I think it's jealousy at first. It's just like, oh, he's going, Niles is going, and I'm not. And we hear him pointedly say, I love you to his friend on the phone, uh-huh. And then I love you to the dog, to Eddie.
Yes. Now, did you notice, I have to point this out, this is unrelated to the emotional beats of the story.
Okay.
But I have to point out that when they first enter the cabin, Frasier is wearing his patented Frasier sadness jeans.
No, I did not notice that, actually.
He's wearing the jeans. They have the holes in them, which, first of all, I'm like, why are you wearing jeans with holes in them onto ice? Like, aren't you cold? Like, isn't that a bad idea? Which means that these jeans have now, they're not just his sadness jeans, but they're his recreational jeans. And I'm very confused.
I think, to be fair, sometimes I am assuming Frasier does not have many pairs of jeans.
This is probably true.
And I'm assuming he also has many layers underneath the jeans. You would not, I've gone out in jeans in extraordinarily cold weather. I've also worn multiple pairs of pants underneath them.
Yeah.
Like a three pairs of pants underneath my jeans when it was very cold in Edmonton. So the jeans themselves, even with or without holes, will do nothing. They are very bad. But, you know, the multiple layers underneath, and still that your legs are hard. Legs are hard. You can only put on so many pairs of pants.
True.
And still they don't. My thighs get very cold thighs are the problem.
Maybe it's just more of like a comfort. Like, these are my comfort pants,
mm-hmm.
my emotional support pants. These are my Frasier's emotional support jeans.
Sure. I think so. I think it's true. And I mean, I think it bears out in this episode, because it is, you know, they get in the cabin and then we don't see them actually do any fishing. They theoretically, by the end of the episode, they have done fishing because they bring fish back, but there's no fishing done what we see. We just see them get angry at each other and lose the car keys into the hole. And
they do a lot of outdoor peeing.
They do that. Well, I mean, it's a fact of life, you know.
It's
interesting that they show it, because that is, you know, it's famously, it's like, you don't show people going to the bathroom on television or movies. You know, you just skip over it. And this,
but if they're writing their names,
that's very true. It becomes, you know, jokes, and also gives Niles and Frasier a chance to talk while their dad's busy. And then they go, oh yeah, he's never said I love you. And they get Martin being kind of ashamed that he's never said it to them.
Yeah. It brings up, like, you know, he's like, oh yeah, your mom said I didn't, you know, express it either. And So it kind of becomes, you know, kind of a touching moment. You know, he girds his loins and says it.
Yes, to both of them separately.
Yeah.
And he also talks about, like, his dad. He's like, oh, my dad never said it to me. Mm-hmm. And you get a little bit, that's a little bit of insight in Martin in his life and how that's influenced him. And that makes perfect sense. I like this episode. It's very good. It's very simple. And I think that's why I like it a lot. It's like, I think my favorite sitcoms and my favorite sitcom episodes are always like, just take a very simple idea and execute on it. And just put as much as you can into it. And, you know, that's what this is. It's very, like, it's full of kind of slapstick humor and good character moments. And it's very sweet. Very sweet episode.
It is. It is. Slapstick is kind of the underlying current for a lot of these episodes. Like, except for maybe the last one. Like, well, and the... No, I would say even the Someone to Watch Over Me. I think, you know, clocking that lady in the elevator is definitely some slapsticky, but like some
physical humor.
Yeah, but like the next several, it's very well. The next one's even called An Affair to Forget, so it's got some delightful. I'm not gonna say fighting. I'll say confrontation, maybe.
I mean, I would call it fighting.
Yeah.
It's a sword fight.
It is a sword fight.
Okay, before we move on. Breaking the Ice, very good. Very sweet.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, poor Niles doesn't catch any fish.
Yeah. He wouldn't know what to do with a fish if he did catch one.
I mean, all they do is just give it to Daphne. They don't...
I know.
They don't sound like they are... That's not like they clean the fish out there on the lake. They just have dangling fish from their little thing. I think you just clean it out there and give Daphne the whatever. Yes, the next episode is An Affair to Forget, which is amazing.
Yeah,
I love it.
Any episode that like involves the Niles Maris estate is just for some reason fantastic. Like the little things that make me laugh, just like the isolation booth, the isolation tank. I don't know why that makes me laugh so much, but it does. Like, of course they would have that in their house. Of course they would.
It's just, again, this is a very, very simple idea. And it's just, it gets to the, it's so absurd. Everything about it gets to so absurd with Frasier. They don't draw it out to make the point that they don't make the point that Frasier knows and Niles doesn't the point of the episode. Because they have Niles find out relatively early on while he's just hanging out in the sensory deprivation tank and just sitting there.
Well, and that's believable because, you know, I know that Frasier kind of wrestled with, you know, what to do about it. But I feel like he would have, even if that hadn't have been Niles in the tank and he was confronting Maris, like, I feel like he would have said something. He said as much. He's like, you know, you have to do this or else I'm going to tell him. Like, they're close, you know, he's not going to, like, not tell him that. So I'm glad they dispensed with that so that we could then get to the meat of the episode where Niles decides to confront Gunther, is that his name?
Gunnar. It's Gunnar. 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 My German is not that great, but... or Bavarian. Whichever. But it's... The layers they add to this, because... We get introduced to Marta.
Oh, Marta.
Marta comes back, I assume.
Oh, absolutely.
Marta's great. I love Marta. She's amazing. She struggles with her pronouns, which is fair because she speaks multiple a bunch of languages, apparently.
Yeah.
And we get her, and they introduce her early on. That's a night with the sensory deprivation tank. And then we get her again when Niles is confronting the fencing instructor, and he only speaks German, and Marta doesn't speak English very well. But Marta also speaks German and Spanish, and Frasier speaks Spanish poorly. And so we have Niles to Frasier to Marta to Gunnar, and then back again. And
It's like the worst game of telephone in the world.
It is. It's great. And then sword fighting with...
Because he's so angry to be accused of stealing Niles's shoes.
It's a matter of honor, Megan.
It is.
It's a matter of honor. How dare you accuse me of stealing your shoes?
And I guess he really is sticking to his principles because, you know, he clearly didn't steal his shoes. He's willing to go to the mattresses and fight that. But then when finally it gets a little sorted, it's like, no, I meant esposa, not zapatos. And he crumples like a tissue, like, oh, yeah, that happened. It was sad. She doesn't like me.
No, that's... and it's... That scene, that one, the moment after he sits down and Niles, they're the back and forth between all three of them just standing in a row, the translating back and forth. Oh, it's so good. So funny. So absurd. Farcical, you might say.
There's a lot of gift worthy moments of Niles with the foil.
Yes. On the piano, especially.
Yes.
So good. David Hyde Pierce, so good at physical comedy and in body language. It's really good because it really, and you've linked me to that article about what 30s movie heroines that Niles is. And yes. And then we watch this episode and it's with the sword fighting.
It's perfect. Yeah, it's an article by Daniel Ortberg in his newsletter. You should check it out.
I'll link to it in the show notes. People can go find that and look at it. But because like Niles is such a feminine male of this because like to make they may even she even talks about how. Yeah, Frasier is only masculine because Niles is there. You know, Frasier is only like, and then you know you look at Niles and he's like the little, I don't know, kind of like David Hyde Pierce is like a smaller, he's skinny, mm-hmm. and he's always afraid of they're all afraid of confrontation, both for Frasier and Niles. Especially, and then Niles is especially afraid of confrontation, and now suddenly he is like Errol Flynn all of a sudden, like whipping the sword around, and then you're like, oh, I guess they would have went, I don't know, has Niles talked about taking up fencing before?
I think so, but not, you know, like back in school, and definitely not to the degree that this professional... Clearly, I mean, the moment, you know, when he stands up from the chair that he's sitting in, it's like, oh, yeah, he's a head taller than me. This is a big mistake. Why am I doing this? You know, the classic moment of I've gotten myself into something I probably should not have.
But it's actually it's good choreography. He swings on the chandelier and breaks it.
Yes.
I was fully expecting that, and they kind of tease it at the end when Frasier picks up the sword off the mantle. I was expecting him to pull a sword off the mantle and fight with that, but
yeah,
it didn't happen. It's fine. It's great either way. And also the description of Maris as not quite human woman. Yes.
We never, you know, it's funny, though, we never meet her. And just the way she's described, though, I kind of feel like she and Niles are almost well matched. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, for whatever happens later and everything, like, you know, she's like this like thin, white, delicate person. And honestly, he's not that far removed from being that same kind of a person, like, you know.
Waifish.
Yes, fussy, you know.
Fussy. I definitely describe adult people as fussy.
Yes, he's a bit of a fuss budget. But yeah, this episode.
Is this like trying to like prep us for future Maris Niles strife?
I mean, I think it might be. I thought it was interesting. He was devastated mm-hmm. when he found out, you know, like legit breakdown, like very upset. And, you know, so relieved when he found out that, you know, no, you know, she rebuffed the advances of this guy, you know, this big strapping fencing coach. Like, she didn't, you know, she loved Niles. And mm-hmm. the way it kind of wraps it up, it's almost like on an island on its own. Because I can't even, I mean, maybe I'm just not remembering well, but like in most episodes, there's these moments of like with him and Daphne, this longing and this like, mm-hmm. you know, you can tell there's something there that they're building up. But I don't think in this episode that even happens at all.
No, they don't like really reference the Niles Daphne stuff at all in this. It is all Niles just being devastated that his wife is theoretically having an affair. And like, you know, the first time he walks through the door to the apartment, and Fraser and Martin are both like, we'll be brave and we won't say anything and we won't feel sorry for him. And then immediately he's just like,
yeah,
he's just crying and wants hugs. And yeah. I think it is, I mean, like, you know, Martin and Fraser have had similar situations. I think that's why they probably did. You just don't have time in the episode to bring in Daphne and all that complications and stuff like that. I think you'd have to have like a two-parter if you want to do that, frankly.
Yeah. So but it's interesting that part is absent when it's there always. And it's like, you would think that this kind of a thing, you know, might be like an out for him in a way. Like, that would have been the easy thing to do, but then, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think they didn't want to, I imagine they didn't quite know where it would go eventually. And so they didn't want to invite things they didn't have about where the show would go. I don't think they knew, hey, yeah, we're eventually going to have Niles and Daphne. It's, I think they were just like, well, I think they felt confident enough in this. They just went with, and you know, it keeps it simple. I'm never going to complain too much about that. You know, you don't invite too many complications to an episode and makes it messy. You know, you may keep it simple, and it ends with Niles just passing multiple drinks into the sensory deprivation tank,
and then hurting his mouth on a rose, which is just the perfect cap on that. That made me laugh a lot.
Sword fighting.
Yes.
Anything else?
No, I think we're good on that one.
Okay.
And then enter BB.
BB, Agents in America Part 3 is a BB episode.
It sure is glorious. She's so terrible. I love it.
I was about to say, I think this episode is enjoyable and funny, but the takeaway from it is BB is a psychopath.
She sure is. And I kind of love it. I love it because she is a psychopath, and it's like, that's exactly what Fraser needs her to be.
Yes, as his agent, she just needs to be crazy and willing to do anything to get him more money.
Yep.
And apparently, I mean, to be fair, it is absolutely crazy to me, the twist where you think that she is going to kill herself because she's heartbroken over Fraser going, no, we can't be in a relationship. That's probably not good. And instead it's not, it's not because she's heartbroken. It's because it's a negotiating tactic.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, I guess it's good because I don't like the idea of her being so heartbroken over Fraser.
No. Doesn't it almost make you wonder, like, how far out she had that planned? Like, did she only seduce him and sleep with him to make him start thinking that way? I think she's capable of it.
I think she's capable. I'm inclined to believe that she just, I'll have a good time. It's fine. Who cares?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the contract negotiation. Hey, this seems like a good, I can do this. Yeah. And Fraser, she's calculating. She knows what she's doing. She is hardened to basically every social situation where she just does not concern with anyone and how they react to her. She is going to do her thing regardless.
She's a great agent, though. Like, she definitely,
I mean, they didn't get caught, so she's great.
She's very confident. I would think you need someone who's very confident in that position. Like the part where, you know, she sets the ultimatum that they have to contact them by midnight. And then she confesses, yeah, there were no other deals, but it's fine. And they're going to call. And they did. And it's like, you know, she seems to have a nose for these things. I was very impressed too, you know, at the beginning of the whole thing leading up to this, of course, is that we find out Frasier is being vastly underpaid at the station where he works, which is amazing. But makes sense. Like, you know, he's new to the game. So Father Tom or whatever, the priest, is making more money than he is. Yeah, he needed a little bit of a bump. So it's probably good he has someone as like overzealous as BB in his corner. Well, she even says, you know, aren't you glad I'm on your side? Well, yes, I am.
Terrific performance by Harriet Sansom Harris, who plays BB. It's you know, I think Frasier as a whole is a show where you can overact at times, and it's fine. It works very well. You're supposed to. But BB is like a whole nother level. It is just scenery chewing on a massive scale, but it works really well for her character because BB is a psychopath.
Yes. I think that's why it's such a delight when she shows up too. It's like, you know, it's just like a sprinkle of some kind of, you know, spice or something. Like, it's not there all the time. It's not something you want there all the time, but when she shows up, it's like, yay, it's a crazy ass BB episode. Exciting.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's not much of the B plot is Niles and Maris, I guess, having a wine club, like coup d'etat or something, where they're like plotting to take over the wine club.
Well, which is interesting because the wine thing comes. Wait, we didn't already watch it, did we? I don't know what order I'm.
I don't think
so.
The
wine club comes back.
I don't think we've watched the wine club.
Wine club drama comes back, and
good.
And
I like that.
Frasier's all up in it too. Okay.
We had them trying to get into a gentleman's club, not a wine club.
Okay, that's right. That's right. Okay.
We have not done the wine club episode yet, but I don't know. It's nice little flavor of a picture of someone serving domestic champagne, not even domestic, from Connecticut.
Yes.
Is Connecticut champagne, like, is Connecticut's like wine or champagne like bad? I don't even know. I'm not a wine person.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know. People live in Connecticut. Like,
I know, that's what I mean. Like, it feels like Connecticut is a rich person state, but
Martha Stewart lives in Connecticut. I mean,
I think it's mostly just the reputation of, like, the five rich people that I know that live in Connecticut. It's nothing to do with the actual state of Connecticut.
Yes.
I don't know. BB's great.
Yeah.
BB's cool. We get Tom back, the president guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
He's there. He's like, hey, don't worry, Frasier. We'll definitely get you back here after you saved this woman's life.
You're such a great, great psychiatrist.
Talk people down.
For being able to talk this woman down. And she really was going to throw herself, though. She's like, catch me. He's like, what are you talking about? No.
How high up is that?
I think they said 9 stories.
Jeez.
Yeah.
You're not going to live through that.
No.
Probably not. She's committed.
She is.
She should be committed.
She should.
I don't know. Not much else. I think most of these episodes are very simple, you know, and there's not necessarily a lot to discuss about them, but I would prefer that to what we got last time, which is
overcomplicated
and offensive at points.
Yeah. Yes.
There's very little that's terribly offensive either. Next, the next episode is The Innkeepers.
Oh.
Which is... Yes. I'm sort of torn on this episode. Because it is hilarious. Simply because of the comedy of errors. Because of the slapstick. Because of the farce. But at a certain point... What are the limits to what the Crane brothers can do?
Well, in their mind, I mean, anyone who thinks that, like, running a restaurant has to be simple or easy or, you know, oh, we could just, you know, throw enough money at this, clearly doesn't know a fraction of what they need to know about the restaurant industry to get into it.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, it seems like at first, you know, on the surface, like it's going to be great, but then you consider some really poor decisions that, like, keeping the senile waiter on board to be your valet.
I believe
that's a great idea.
I believe you mean Otto?
Yes, Otto. Which, I mean, okay, but like. I mean, if you want to keep someone like that on board who, like, couldn't even remember which table you were at when in an empty restaurant, perhaps you should give him something a little more benign than the keys to, like, your rich clientele's Mercedes and stuff.
My limits is more about them, an episode where they literally buy a restaurant and then decide to run it, and then it's the point where you're like, is there a limit to how much money they have? When the last episode literally is about how Frasier is underpaid. Yeah. And now they are buying a restaurant, I would imagine, is not inexpensive. It is you're buying a building.
Yeah.
And you're paying staff. You have payroll you have to make.
Although not a lot of staff, as we see. I mean, that restaurant's kind of running on
people.
Yeah. And it was in pretty, you know, poor shape. So I guess, you know.
They got a discount?
They might have. Like, it seemed like it was kind of like, this is on its last legs. Maybe they can got a good deal on it and you know, can throw money into having this wonderful chef come in who then gets fed up with,
soufflés.
They're constant meddling, yes.
Though we are serving the soufflés in big soufflés. We want big soufflés.
Who wants a big soufflé?
Niles. Like, Niles is the answer to that question, Megan.
Niles was in the wrong on this one, I will say. I think it would be kind of gross to, like, have a... It doesn't make any sense to have a family-style dessert in a fine dining restaurant.
But they know. They know food. They know wine. Come on. So they said, it's that fact. And I'm going to ask you what your thoughts are at a single moment in this episode.
Okay.
The moment when Roz comes back through the doors from there's an explosion. We hear an explosion. We don't see it, but we hear it. And then Roz comes back through the doors into the kitchen from the main hall of the restaurant. And she is Looney Tunes. Out of her mind. Her hair is standing straight up. She is smeared with smoke and cherries. What are your thoughts?
I was waiting for...
Waiting, I mean, you say? Waiting at the restaurant, just like Roz. Hey!
Oh my gosh. You know, they're obviously setting up this joke. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very curious when it would be deployed. Poor Roz. Like... Poor Roz, who's date, like, who was that, the guy from the Drew Carey show?
Diedrich Bader, yes.
From yes, the Drew Carey okay. show. Office Space, right?
And yes, so, Office Space as well. And and various, many men. Diedrich Bader does a lot of stuff. He does not stop working.
Yeah, good for him. I like him. This episode, it was very interesting how quickly he could turn on, oh, you're my date. Oh, you're my waitress. Okay. So... From the jump, poor Roz. And yeah, that was something. That was something.
I
mean, it's just on in addition to that, and then the sprinklers, the eels.
I love the eels thing. That's my favorite thing in the episode is Daphne. But I ask that question because it is like,
it's over the top.
It is very cartoonish.
Yeah.
And
it literally is. It's like Tex Avery, like you put your head into a, you know, a bag of dynamite, like in a cartoon, like if a cartoon character had their head looking inside something and dynamite went off and then they pull their head out and, you know, Daffy Duck's like beak is on the back of his head or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's my... That and the very sheer fact that they make an entire episode about, yeah, they bought a restaurant and they're running it. And I'm like, wow, they have like hundreds of thousands of dollars just in their pockets ready to go. I guess Niles has theoretically access to Maris's money, but still, it's, I can dismiss that for the most part, but it's just when, you know, it you look at like the sword fighting and that in the Affair to Forget episode. And sure, it is ridiculous on a certain level. You're like, we're watching Niles and this random sword, the fencing instructor dancing around the room and sword fighting literally in front of us in a sitcom. It's very strange and absurd and ridiculous and funny, but it's not cartoonish. It is. I think it manages to push Niles to a physical limit, but it doesn't ever lapse into, oh, this is clearly not real.
Yeah.
And I think
this almost seemed like a dream sequence, like,
right. And that's at what point do you want to draw the line? Do you want to have a line when you're making a show like this? Do you want to say, no, that doesn't fit what the show is? Is it too cartoonish? And I don't know if it is too cartoonish or not. It took me out of the episode a little bit when she walks in. I laughed at it because it's like it's such a surprise, and it is paying off them, like I guess pouring an entire bottle of brandy into the cherries. But
I kind of wanted like a Mythbusters moment. Like, can we get them to recreate that and see how high the flame actually would go? Because I'm very I am curious about that. I don't know. Maybe we'd be proven wrong. Maybe Roz's, you know, I don't know. I would have to assume there's maybe one or two like second degree burns under all of that soot, but maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes me go, I laugh and I also groan a little bit, and it's, I think that's what this episode does to me. It's very funny and it's very silly and very wacky, and it's kind of there's basically no character in it. You think that this is going to be like a Martin like kind of affirming like a lesson to Niles and Frasier by the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. But it's really not. It's just, hey, your restaurant's destroyed. And that's it. They're just like, oh, yeah, there's a car in the restaurant and the sprinklers have gone off and your table full of food critics are all upset. And like everyone else is upset. And your restaurant's...
Except for Bulldog.
Bulldog's a pretty agreeable guy for the largest part. You know, he can roll with the punches.
Yes, he can. I think he was fine with the outcome of the situation and his... like basically alcoholic version of a like suicide drink, a fountain drink.
Isn't that just a Long Island iced tea though?
It could be. Let me just consolidate these glasses and stick a lily in my pants and go about my business.
I mean, we didn't even mention him and the bodyguard.
Yes.
Which I really did appreciate. It's great. I love Bulldog's the best. I'm gonna start my own fan club for Bulldog.
The Bulldog fan club. The Bulldog bullpen.
Exactly.
There's your title.
That's the name of this podcast, Megan. Did you know? That's the name of the series is the Bulldog Bullpen.
I didn't realize that's what I was signing up for. Okay.
I mean, it wasn't at first, but then we watched Enough Frasier, and I mean, what else could it be?
It has evolved.
Yeah. I think this episode's very funny. Them cooking they're terrible. The very badly cooking Roz and all of them being recruited just randomly. Hey, you work for us.
Yeah. And after a simple, you know, like, who doesn't know the way doors work? Like, you go in, they knock out all of the wait staff because obviously they've never worked in a restaurant before. And, you know, passing on the right is apparently something that's a foreign concept. So, but there's only like, what, 3 waiters in the first place? Oh, I guess the rest of them run out the door when he mentions that the immigration.
That's actually the most accurate thing. That's the most accurate part of this episode, honestly, if you want to be realistic. And Daphne killing the eel.
Oh, yeah.
The best.
Yes. I did laugh quite a bit at Niles just taking the cleaver and just splashing it in the tank. Like, that's going to accomplish anything. That was pretty good. But
it's, hey, you want to kill an eel? You splash a cleaver at it. That's all it takes. Yeah. It'll die of fright.
Yeah. He'll be like, what is happening? Just float to the top.
My real question is, what happens after this episode with the restaurant?
I know. I would think that one night would put them in a considerable amount of debt. Like, I think a lot of, just the building damage alone. Hopefully they had good insurance.
I assume they sell it again. They sell the building and then to some other sucker who also thinks they can make a restaurant out of it.
Probably just became a parking garage or something. Office building. It's the oldest restaurant in Seattle. I'm sure Seattle is just gearing up to gentrify even more.
Oh, God.
I'm sure that, you know, it became like a shopping center or something. Condos.
That's,
you know.
That's sad.
It is, but
there, it was the Happy Brothers.
I know. Well,
it's a true dark victory, which is the name of our final episode.
Yeah.
The season finale.
The season finale. We get a Roz episode.
Is that what this is?
I think so. I think it's focusing more on her, you know, like the focus is trying to like make her feel better in a way.
I felt like this is actually, I think it, like, she dominates the first half of it.
Yeah.
And then after that, it kind of segues into kind of a round out the ensemble cast for the season kind of episode.
Yeah, I could see that. It's kind of like a coming together. Everybody's there, you know.
And Fraser goes from one to from every goes through every single person. All the members of the main cast that aren't him, basically. And even he gets a moment at the end. And it's like, here's where the characters are at the end of the season. It definitely is very different from the season finale of season one.
Yes.
Because season one felt like, we don't know what we're doing. So we don't know what was happening after this season. So here's a wrap up.
Yeah. It was almost more like, I don't know, like wistful or something. Mm-hmm. And then this one's more like celebratory. Victory. It's in the title.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. It's like, I think it is, it works in this, I think it works in a similar way in that it is kind of giving viewers kind of a synopsis on this season, kind of a little mm-hmm. bit of like, here's where all these characters are as the season ends. Just give you an idea, a general idea of how they are doing. They're all angry.
Yeah.
They're all angry, except Fraser's there.
Yeah. They have some stuff to work through. It's interesting because, you know, yeah, we've talked about how the first season, the end seemed kind of like, what's going to happen with this? And then, of course, obviously, it went on to, you know, critical and popular acclaim, won the Emmy. I'm looking at the list of Emmy Award winners for comedy. Mm-hmm. It won again this year, 1995. Like, it basically dominated for 4 years in a row, 5 years in a row, until Ally McBeal unseated it in 1999.
Ally McBeal.
Although it was nominated that year as well, and in subsequent years. But, like, you know, I think it was probably more of a sure thing that, like, all right, we're back, you know, and we're here to stay. And, you know, we can end things on kind of a fun note, and we can kind of, like, hint that there's still more to talk about with all of these characters, you know, because we know that we'll get a chance to do that.
Right. And I think it is a good, I think it's, I like the, it's apparently, this was a crossover, a sort of, for that night of television on NBC or CBS or ABC, NBC. It was NBC,
NBC.
Right? NBC.
Yeah. Crossover.
Yeah, because all four television shows, it was a nationwide blackout.
Huh.
So all four television shows episodes were about a blackout happening.
Interesting. I was not aware of that.
I mean, I wasn't until I read through a couple of reviews of this episode. So apparently every show that night on NBC was like, oh, there's a blackout, and they deal with it in their own ways. And I think I you know, it's a neat I guess a gimmick. It's neat, and it's a good way to kind of enforce tension on the group, and they're already having some conflict, and then there's tension there, and then Frasier is the one that fixes everything. And, you know, it's kind of an episode that reminds you, like, hey, Frasier's kind of the glue that holds this group together. He is, and, like, the show oftentimes kind of makes Frasier the fool. You know, he's the one who makes mistakes and does a dumb thing without knowing something, and then he's the reason, and everything falls apart. Or he, you know, he has a bodyguard and thinks for some reason the bodyguard is his stalker.
Yeah, he's susceptible to all of the foolishness that anyone is. But at the end of the day, he's still a smart, you know, smart guy.
Smart guy, and he wants his friends to be happy. You know, he goes to Roz and, you know, asks her, well, why did you really stay? Why did you really not go to your family party? And goes to Daphne and Martin and makes them feel, makes them, you know, kind of mend their arguments, where Daphne is pulling his cane from him and throwing it in his walker and throwing it away. And goes to Niles and mends their argument, where Frasier accidentally tells one of Niles's patients to stop seeing him.
Yeah.
But he is the one who mends all these things. He brings them all back together as a group. And it's a testament to, hey, Frasier's good at his job, but also Frasier cares about all these friends and his family. He wants them all to be happy. And I think that is the one thing I think I take from this episode more than anything, is just it makes Roz an official member of this extended family.
I agree with that. I think it kind of cements, you know, bringing her, like having her interacting more with his family too, you know, it sets the tone for, you know, again, more to come, because you're setting up other relationships and things like that. So,
right. And I think that's, if anything, that, like, if the episode accomplishes anything, I think it's very much like, no, Roz is officially, you know, Daphne was kind of already there for the most part, like very early in basically season one, where they're like, yeah, Daphne's basically a member of the family now for some strange way. And now Roz is officially a part of that, too. I think it's just telling the audience that officially, like, no, Roz is more than just a producer at the radio station. We're going to make her a bigger part of the show. And we're going to make it very clear here. She's with the family. She's hanging out with them. She's doing fun stuff with them. She's having problems with them, you know, just like all the rest of the cast.
Yeah. Which, honestly, I mean, I think it's kind of necessary to do, because, like, Daphne being the only, like, female main character, you know, in season one, she's the butt of, and season one obviously is like a setup season, but it's like, you know, she's the kooky British lady who's, you know, maybe psychic and had a weird upbringing and blah, 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 you know, like you need something to balance it out. That's a little bit more like, okay, you know, Roz, of course, has her comic, you know, like aspects, but she's just more of a normal person in the same way that, you know, the other characters are normal people.
I mean, I think it has, I think they have, I don't know if any of it, I don't know if it was all purposeful, but I think the way, you know, you, Roz basically rounds out the main five of the cast members, and they all have interesting parallels with each other in different ways. Like, you know, Martin and Daphne are kind of like, they parallel because they're both like kind of blue collar, you know, kind of everyday people, you know, not elevated sophisticates like Frasier and Niles. And Roz is closer to them in that regard. And she has, you know, lowbrow tastes or whatever. But she's also a woman, so her and Daphne aligned there, while Martin and Niles and Frasier obviously are all men, but they don't necessarily align on the same kind of, you know, scale of masculinity, where, you know, Martin is a typical man's man and Niles and Frasier are not. And you, like, there's a nice array between all these characters, between what they, you know, how they were raised, how they feel about different things, who's conservative, who's not. And it gives the show basically a lot of ways to play with that. You can have a lot of episodes where, you know, episodes where you can have an episode where you put these two characters together, either as friends or against each other for some reason. And it, you know, can create an interesting interplay of relationships because of the fact there's such a range of characters. You know, Daphne is, you know, sometimes psychic. Roz is not, you know, and you get, because there's that clear difference between the two, you can shift the tones of an episode pretty widely, which I think is, I don't know if it's purposeful, but it is smart in the way they lay out the show. Like, I think that's what one of the reasons the show went on for so long is because you have this core cast of characters that are really, really strong and have a wide range of potential.
The Frasierverse is expanding, so to speak. And it's good to have, you know, having Roz be more a part of things, balance things out a little bit more. Like you said, I think it brings much needed, well, again, much needed a female character who's not a love interest, you know.
Or a psychopath. And,
or just kind of, you know, I don't know. Sometimes Daphne, obviously she becomes more involved too and gets more of her own storylines. But like, you know, that almost seems like the core of the show is the three, you know, Niles and Frasier and Martin. And so it's just kind of like commenting on that. And now it's like, we kind of know the beats of that, of those relationships. So there needs to be more to, you know, for them to interact with, because otherwise it's just going to be the same show over and over and over again.
Right. And I think it's not, and it doesn't feel, what's the word I'm looking for? Sudden. It's not like, oh, what? Roz is here and suddenly she's a big part of the show. It's very like Roz has been there for a long time, for the whole show. She's just kind of been smaller parts. And then suddenly you're like, you just make her a bigger and bigger part of the show over and throughout the episodes. And suddenly she's just like, hey, she's a regular cast member. And I think because they have such a wide array of like supporting characters that appear, you know, all the radio people, all the random friends that pop in from time to time, which, you know, they usually disappear, but it is a chance for you to, you know, remind people like, hey, this is a real world. This is a populated world. These are real. This is a, yes, obviously they only have like three sets for the most part, but this is real. Frasier is a real place. Seattle's real. All the Frasierverse is a real populated universe. And when you bring in characters that were like smaller characters and you make them as central parts of the show, you remind people, it makes them feel attached to not just the characters, but to the show, to it, the place, to the setting, as like in the realest sense of the word. You know, setting does not necessarily mean it's just the place where they the thing happens. You know, setting is also like, it feels real. It feels like I could go walk down to the radio station and go talk to the Chopper Dave or whatever it is. And yell at Chopper Dave.
Chopper Dave. Good old Chopper.
I feel sad for Frasier at the end of this. A little bit.
Yeah.
Because they all go to get, they all get to get barbecue. And he doesn't.
Yeah, I think he's a little like, you know, he's like, he did kind of fix everything, and it's like, this is the reward, you know, for it. Like, you can do the right thing. Things don't still don't always turn out the way, you know, the way you might want them to.
But. Right. He does get a puppy.
This is true. Wow.
Also, they, over the end credits, they have pictures of all the callers, or I guess a lot of the guest callers over the season.
Yeah.
All the famous people.
Who I definitely did not recognize of them.
No,
I've taken to not looking for them in the credits just to see if I can identify them. And I mean, it's not easy.
I mean, they are usually oftentimes playing a character that obscures their voice to a certain sense, because the car salesman is John Lithgow.
Yeah.
Which you're like, oh, what? That was John Lithgow? Okay. Some of them are not easily recognizable either, because they're like really small time, you know, character actors or whatever. Yeah. This episode has Shelley Duvall in it.
Yeah.
As Caroline.
Which I was not, I did not recognize.
I didn't either, but they had pictures in the end credits, and they all look so young. All those people, they look, James Spader.
Well.
His elfish little.
1994. Yeah.
He just looks like a baby.
That was 1995. I mean, how old was James Spader? Over 20 years ago now, right?
Yes. So, oof, I was 10 years old.
He was closer to, you know, John Hughes James Spader than, what is he on now? The Blacklist?
Blacklist James Spader. That show's still going, apparently. I've not watched it. It has 126 episodes.
That's I've never seen it. Or even, I guess, The Office.
Six years.
Wow.
6 years of The Blacklist.
I guess I think more of him now as, what's his name? Robert California from The Office.
Mm-hmm.
Which at that point it was kind of like, oh, wow, you know, that's James Spader now. But
now he is James. I wear a hat, James Spader.
Yeah.
I wear a fedora. My James Spader, you might say. In 1995, he was 35 years old.
Okay. Well, and that was like, oh, what was that movie? That's pretty close to like, what was the movie?
Stargate is the one you're thinking of.
He was in Stargate. Okay, but that's not the one I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the David Cronenberg, Crash.
Yes. Oh my God, Crash.
Yeah. And that was
the better, the better Crash.
Controversial.
I like to say the better Crash.
Yeah. I don't think I saw the other Crash.
So. Don't. It's terrible.
It
won an Academy Award. It's terrible.
Yeah.
The 1996 Crash is a better film. The book. I don't read. Hey, any advice out there? Anyone listening out there? There is the 1996 Crash movie is based on a book, also called Crash. Don't read that book before bedtime. Bad decision on my part. I did that once.
Oh dear.
Don't do that. It's a very strange book. J.G. Ballard.
I could see that being an unsettling nighttime read.
It's way crazier than the movie itself is, even. But I don't know. What am I talking about? Dark Victory. James Spader looked very young in the pictures they used. So all the pictures they used of all the famous people. Gary Sinise.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the other people. There's a lot of them. Many, many, many celebrities. John Lithgow looks the same, I should say. I'll say that. John Lithgow looks the same. He's always looked the same.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good.
He doesn't age, I think. What I'm saying, he's a vampire. Him and Keanu Reeves, both vampires.
Yeah.
Dark Fate, I think it's a solid season ender.
I think so, too. It's a good, you know, let's wrap this up for the year. Go enjoy your summer. We'll see you in the fall. Frasier will have a haircut. It's fine.
Now I'm like ready. I need to like I don't think I have an idea of like a set in stone idea of what Kelsey Grammer's hair is supposed to look like. So I'm really curious to see this haircut. The season three haircut.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's how he looks now, basically. But I remember at the time, like, he had played this character, Frasier Crane. Maybe they just decided, you know, look, it's the 1990s. He's been playing this character for probably a decade at that point, right? Like, from Cheers, always with the long hair. So just time to freshen it up a little bit.
I will say that within these six episodes, multiple jokes about Frasier's baldingness.
Yeah.
About his big forehead and the lack of hair and haircut. Like, I believe Martin says, mentions a haircut and says, well, that wouldn't take very long for you.
Yeah.
And then I think Daphne or Roz says something about his forehead is.
Yes.
And he's just like, neither time he replies, he just looks sad.
Yeah. I guess he decides during the hiatus to like lean into it.
No, I guess, might as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Dark Victory is good. This is a good run of episodes. Much better than the previous six. No monkey murders. No slut shaming. Much better. Yes,
definitely much better. I think this better sets the tone for upcoming, you know, seasons. I mean, all of them have their ups and downs, which I think is fair when you have. I mean, these seasons are like 24 episodes long. You know.
Yes.
It's not concise. There's going to be some filler. But
yeah, I mean, it's the nature of, I think we're more used to it nowadays to shows, you know, premiere television and Netflix shows where it's like, hey, it's 10 episodes and you're done.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, or 8 or 12, you know, whatever they are. It's not like there's very few shows that are like, no, we're going to have 24. Like, it's just the network sitcoms that are this long anymore. And even they are starting to change, you know, a little bit. And you're just like, wait a second, that there's this many episodes because they had to fill that much time. That is literally the only reason they made so much of some of these shows. Not because there was like a need, like someone had an artistic story to tell. They just is like, no, we need to make a lot of show because we have a lot of time to fill. And you're like, oh, right.
Yeah, it's definitely a different. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's interesting to think too, like, I think newer shows probably have a smaller writer's room than some of these sprawling shows as well. So you're probably, I don't know if this is true or not. Someone in the industry can correct me, but like, it seems to me you probably have like maybe more of a tight-knit group these days creating shows.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you look at some of these episodes and it's across, you know, different names all over the place. Maybe that lends to some of the unevenness, or like an episode, you get an episode and it's like, where did that come from? You know, like, this doesn't fit in with the rest of what's going on. And I mean, maybe that's a reason too.
I mean, it's the nature of the beast sometimes. You have, the thing you have to remind yourself is, I try and remind myself, you know, when you see a writer's name on something, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's exclusively there. It, you know, the nature of collaboration on these things is, so there's like writers' rooms plus producers and directors plus, you know, the actors themselves. There's just
the network giving notes. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. There's probably like, you know, there's many people that are all kind of shaping this thing, and you don't want to necessarily always ascribe it to a single person or a single idea. And sometimes, you know, there's a lot of, and they had to make a lot of episodes in a relatively short amount of time, which you kind of have to look at like batting average versus like, oh, they made one good episode and then a bunch of bad ones, or, you know, they made 16 out of 24 that were good. And then
I would definitely say that their batting average is overall high.
Yes. Very good. Know? They're the Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah.
Ted Williams. Ichiro Suzuki.
Taking your word for it.
They were all very high average.
High batting.
High average hitters. Anything you want to add about these episodes before we end?
I don't think
season
so.
It
was a high note. It was nice to end on a high note. So
yes, it was. I think if we'd gotten the last batch at the end of season two, I'd be like, ugh.
I don't know if I want to continue on.
This is, ugh. Megan, is there anything you'd like to plug before we go?
I'll just stick with my standard support your local libraries. Check them out.
Yeah, it's important. It's a good place. Like, it's, they're free. I mean, they're you know, people's tax dollars pay for them, but they're free. Well, yeah. They're
Free to use.
Free to use. Yeah. So you just go there and you just say, "Hey, I live here," and they say, "Oh, cool. Here's a card," and then here you have access to everything we have. You can just borrow it and use it if you like.
And you don't even need to come in if you don't really want to, because we've got free ebooks and free streaming audio and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. So there's
this the anti-Audible commercial. You don't need that. You can probably get it if you live. I will say, if you live, you know, in a fairly, you know, I don't know about the smaller libraries. Sometimes people say, oh, my library doesn't have anything. If you live near a relatively large town, you probably have a decent library system. So,
yeah, who? I mean, what are those people in the flyover states? Puh, what do they even matter?
There's some great libraries in the flyover states. Some of them have libraries that are better than.
I'm being facetious.
Kansas City has a nice library. If any of you are from Kansas City, you should check out your library.
All my Kansas City listeners, go check out your library. That's Megan's plug for today. Megan, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Go Kansas City. Thanks again to Megan for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman. My website is robbiedorman.com. You can find links to all my other podcasts there and a link to my debut horror novel, Conquest, available right now. I'd love for you to go check that out. The show's website is serialfanaticist.com, and you can follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/serialfanaticist. If you like the show, please give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Subscribe, tell your friends, all those good things that everyone tells you to do. They tell you to do them because they work. I appreciate it if you take the time to do it. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.